Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at bostonscores.org/Noah.
Well, I tend to think of the gosling as a poem. Critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
What was Joe Murray's announcement there right before the end of the DraftKings show? Tiger Woods back to hitting golfing balls next week. Is that how he phrased it, Tucker? Was that it?
Golfing. Doing the golfing.
Doing the golfing like of balls. Tiger Woods will be. Thank you. End transmission. Not this week. Welcome into the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's Hardy, followed by the Sports Hub Golf Club wrap-up show at 9 a.m., a.k.a., hey, it's Hardy, a.k.a. Mimosas. Yeah, this weekend we've got the Workday Charity Open going on at Muirfield. And so back-to-back tournaments at Muirfield. What do you want? Do you want to talk a whole lot about the Workday Charity Open? I myself do not, and I've been watching a lot of golf. I always watch a lot of golf, but I've been watching more this year as there are not a whole lot of other sports going on. Congratulations to the New England Revolution, by the way, beating Montreal Thursday night, 1-0 down in Orlando. But, I mean, we are starved for sports right now, and I could not make myself watch much of the Workday Charity Open. I mean, number one, suffered a rain delay in the second round, so the second round is still not completed. And there are some interesting names on the leaderboard, but not enough to compel me to watch. Colin Morikawa, who is an American golfer, he is, I just don't want you to be thrown off by his name if you don't know anything about Colin Morikawa. He's 13 under par, 65-66. He's playing well. I just don't know that he's going to move the needle in terms of casual golf fans. And you can just double down on a bunch of the guys who are within five strokes of the lead right now. Those players include Kevin Streelman at 10 under par, Justin Thomas, who he's not quite in the whatever happened to category yet, but he certainly hasn't maintained his high level of golf that we saw from him in recent years. Also at 10 under par, they're three strokes off the lead, followed by Sam Burns and Hideki Matsuyama. All right. If you go out to within five strokes of the lead, you include Victor Hovland and Rory Sabatini. But, I mean, some of the more interesting players, I don't want to say they've played themselves out of contention because we know that Saturday is moving day, but number one, they're going to have to finish up the second round for a lot of these players, including Rory Sabatini, who is got it one hole left to play in his second round. And some of the other guys who are six, seven, eight strokes off the lead, those names include Ian Poulter, Patrick Reed, Matt Kuchar. I don't want to say that they're out of it because a lot can happen on Saturday. But again, everyone's talking about Tiger Woods coming back next week. By the way, Brendan Steele, who has been on this program before, really nice guy, good player, has struggled to get himself back into the winner's circle in the last couple of years. He's playing well again. At least, you know, he's on the right side of par at 5 under. He's, you know, right in there with some other very good players. Steve Stricker. He's in there with Adam Hadwin, the Canadian, who's been tearing it up lately, also at 5 under par. And he's a stroke better than Keegan Bradley and Jason Day, Pat Perez. But again, probably not within striking distance if Morikawa continues to play like he has. I'm not picking on the Workday Charity Open by any means. There's another tournament going on, the American Century Championship, the Celebrity Golf Tournament. I saw that was on last night, and I tried watching for a minute. And I was all in on the Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning match. You know, that to me, that was something we all watched and enjoyed. But, you know, in other years, have you watched the American Century Championship? And let's face it, the idea of watching Tiger and Phil playing with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning isn't quite the same as watching John Smoltz. And it's just not. Yeah, Mark Mulder. These guys can play, right? And Peyton Manning and Tom Brady both have very good games, but they're not at Tony Romo levels. I don't even want to watch Tony Romo play all that much. You know, the celebrity aspect of this is not enough to get me to watch. I would have liked to have seen Patrick Mahomes out there, who apparently is playing along with Aaron Rodgers. Larry Fitzgerald, hell of a golfer. Steph Curry is out there. Is it enough to make me, you know, tune in on a Friday night? No, as it turns out, it was not. So You are free to follow along with the American Century Championship Celebrity Golf Tournament as much as you want, and feel free to let me know what happened at the end of the weekend. I don't see myself watching a whole lot of that. And quite frankly, I don't see myself. I've turned into Zoe in some regards. Now I'm waiting for Tiger to come back. And that is the word. That is what we are all essentially waiting for now. Is that Tiger Woods will make his return next week, that announcement being made. So we'll wait and see. And I don't have a great indication of how he's going to play. None of us do. You can't judge on how he played at his home course in the charity match with Brady and Phil and Peyton. It's difficult to say that, you know, you can tell he was certainly dialed in and everything looked great in his game, but he's on his home course and he's, you know, playing in essentially a friendly match. So not a lot to gauge other than we'll get a chance to watch him next weekend. The other big story of the week, quite frankly, is the Ryder Cup and the decision to postpone the Ryder Cup, which with every postponement and cancellation in sports doesn't come as a huge surprise, but this one, you know, there's a lot that went into it, and the ramifications down the road for all the rescheduling that will have to take place now. So essentially, Seth Waugh, who's the CEO of the PGA of America, he got together and made the announcement along with Guy Kinnings, who's the deputy chief of the European Tour, and Jay Monahan, who was the PGA Tour commissioner. And they had a joint press conference over Zoom to announce that the Ryder Cup, Whistling Straits, was going to be postponed until next year. It's the trickle-down effect that this has, that the cancellation and postponements of other sports seem to have, that are the most eye-popping. First of all, the PGA Tour and pushed the President's Cup at Quail Hollow in Charlotte back to 2022 because of this Ryder Cup postponement. The next Ryder Cup in Rome is now going to be in 2023. So for the time being, it looks like we're back to odd-numbered years, you know, which had been the case up until September 11th. In 2001, and then that caused the Ryder Cup to go to even years. So now we're going to be back to odd years for the Ryder Cup. Seth Waugh said that they really, really wanted to pull this off. He said it took on more importance after the Olympics were postponed. They wanted to replace some of the nationalism that comes along with the Olympics. They felt a responsibility to kind of fill that void. I think it's a nice sentiment, and I know Ryder Cup fans feel that way. But I don't know that it reaches the level of nationalism that the Olympics bring out. The other thing that they had to contend with were the corporate relationships that they have. It's one of the biggest corporate events in golf. And to that point, the PGA of America has a huge, huge build out that they do. And at Whistling Straits, it was going to be the same as every other Ryder Cup. And they thought, you know what, if we build this thing out and then we have to cancel it, you know, what a disaster. Seth Waugh from the PGA, he made this analogy. He said he consulted with the Green Bay Packers and said, what if we had to build something like the size of Lambeau Field, get the ropes up, and then have it canceled? And he said that's where they were headed, and that's what they were trying to avoid. Why did they cancel? Well, obviously, there's the spike in cases. There's the health and safety issues. But you can pull off these other golf tournaments, as we've seen, without fans. And Seth Waugh said, we had no reason to believe we could do it without the fans. That's a huge, huge component of the Ryder Cup. The fans are maybe the one thing in golf where the fans are, they're the biggest part of it, okay? They play a larger role in the Ryder Cup than they do in any other golf event. And they didn't want to do it without the fans. He said not only not having a smaller number of fans there, and they were talking about going from 40,000 spectators on the course each day down to 10,000. He said, well, that was bad enough. He said, what if we can't have people travel from Europe? You know, and right now, could you? I don't know. I haven't checked the travel restrictions and availabilities to and from Europe. But as we've learned from this, this all can change at a moment's notice. Who knows what's going to happen when in another month or two would European golf fans be able to travel over? And that's part of the Ryder Cup experience. You have fans from all over the world, or from Europe and the U.S. anyway, doing their thing. And that's their part of the atmosphere. That's part of what makes the Ryder Cup the Ryder Cup. They had no confidence they were going to be able to allow or host European fans. So that factored in. The PGA had done everything they could. Like I said, they had agreed to move the President's Cup forward a year. So that puts off the European-hosted Ryder Cup till 2023. The rest of the regular season schedule is affected. Quail Hollow is going to be skipped in 2021 as the regular venue for the Wells Fargo Championship. So now, like, all this other stuff that comes in, like, it's not just what we did for this year. It's what we were doing for next year and the year after. So, you know, get used to it. Whether it's a rescheduling of a basketball season or whether it's the rescheduling of a Ryder Cup, you're going to look back and say, why the hell aren't they playing at Quail Hollow this year? Well, there was the coronavirus, and then the Ryder Cup moved, and everything got screwed up for years afterward. And that's what they're dealing with right now. I'm going to try something brand new here this morning. We're going to try something brand new. I got to give you a couple of equipment reviews. I'm going to do that next. Some shoes and some wedges. All right. So we have those to do. But I also received a golf tip via a video. I'm going to show you what the tip was, share with you what the tip was. But I'm interested if you have ever received one golf tip that at least more than momentarily, but for a reasonable period of time, changed your game. Tom Watson talked about this. You remember the British Open where Tom Watson, all he needed to do was make par on the 72nd hole, he was going to win the thing. And he juiced an 8-iron over the green and decided to, for some ungodly reason, putt the ball back up the slope as opposed to chipping it, even though he's one of the best short game players of all time. He ended up making bogey at that British Open, forced the playoff, and lost. But I bring it up because Tom Watson said he started doing something in his swing to my knowledge, he never announced or vocalized what it was. It was essentially one thing he started doing. Whether it was a tip or whether it was something he figured out on his own, he said it changed his game. It allowed him to play at a high level of golf much longer than he thought he was going to be able to. Have you received that one tip that changed your game? By the way, this is a terrible idea. This is what I get told by instructors and pros all the time. They're like, Hardy, stop listening to tips. Stop changing your swing on a whim. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if it can get you through your round today, if there's one tip, if there's one thing that you can do, if there's one swing thought you can have prior to going out there and maybe have it in the back of your mind that can help you hit some crisp irons today or keep you in play off the tee, I'm all for it, and I want to hear it. And I think we should make this a community of tips that actually work, that could actually change your game, at least for the day. So we're going to try it here this morning on the Sports Hub Golf Club. So go ahead, Tucker. I guess we'll start lining them up. We'll see if anybody actually wants to share their tips. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is the show that helps you put it in the hole. The Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Tucker, we need to come up with a name for this segment, like tip encouraged, tipping culture, tips appreciated, tips appreciated. How about that?
Tip talk.
Tip jar?
We'll come up with some.
I want it on record. I understand this is a terrible idea. I mean, this has the potential to do more harm than good. But I'm no doctor. I didn't take any Hippocratic oath with regard to the golf game. I say if you've got a tip that has worked for you, I want to hear it. I've been collecting golf tips in my head from instructors, from Golf Digest, from watching the Golf Channel for decades. And I've got like a whole sea of them up there. There's one that's working for me right now. Maybe I'll tell you what it is if you want to hear it. Maybe you don't. I don't know. Other people want to share them, though. Mark is in the car. He's going to be the first up. A little tip talk here, Mark. Thanks for joining us on the Sports Hub Golf Club. What do you got, Mark?
Alrighty, what's up, brother?
How you doing?
Good, man. Good. Great Saturday morning here. So
my tip is, I
was at the local country club a few years ago now, and you know, the golf pro, you know, he's an old timer, probably in his mid-80s. I take it he knows what he's doing. So I'm at the driving range, you know, shaking balls into the woods like I do because I'm a hockey player, and the guy comes up, he says, hey kid, what are you doing? I said, I'm just practicing my golf swing. And he's like,
I'm just hitting these hosel rockets into the woods, sir. Thank you for asking.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the guy, he's like, can I give you a tip? And I said, of course, you know, anything's welcome. And he said, slow down your hands. Your hand speed is crazy. Hmm. And dude, I slowed down my hands. You know, I did everything else. You know, I've read a few little golf digest and stuff, so I get that basic swing down, but I guess my hands are too fast, so dude, I shoot rockets straight now, and I got like 30 yards on my drive, I swear to God. And I figured if the harder I hit the ball, the further it goes. But he's like, this ain't a hockey puck, it's a golf ball.
Okay. So, all right, Mark, I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you. This is something that Maz said to me yesterday. I was talking to Maz on the phone last night, and we were talking golf, actually, about playing this weekend, and he had something going, and I had something going. I'm actually going to play with Wallach later today. How do you feel about that, Tucker? Getting out on the course with Johnny Wall game, yeah. A quick 9 holes, right, in between family commitments. We're gonna squeeze it in there. But Maz said one thing to me as he's hanging up in his sage-like voice that he has. Hardy? What? Yes, Maz. Tempo. Okay, tempo. So many of these things relate back to the same things, right? And whether it's, you know, whether you're trying to do like a one-piece takeaway or keep your head, that all I think relates to one aspect of the golf swing, right? And that is essentially the turn. Whether you're talking about your head, whether you're talking about the, you know, the connectivity of the arms, that's all about the turn. But everything else, as Mark just said, about slowing your hands down, that relates to one other big category, which I feel is tempo. Slowing your hands down. Now, this old-timer saw Mark and recognized in him, God bless him, something that he could say to him that he could immediately put into use. If a pro, this Stephen Daly over at the Cape Club in Sharon, right, who is a really good teacher. I don't know if he has as much time to teach anymore now, but, you know, he understands this because he's given us tips on the air before. He gave me one of the greatest tips I'm going to share with you here in a few minutes. But he knows enough not to say to me, Hardy, you're laying it off a little at the top, you know. Means nothing to me. It literally means nothing to me. Instead, he has to say something more like, put your left heel down to start the downswing. Okay? Now, he knows how everything is connected in a golf swing, and he knows if I'm laying it off at the top. He knows that if I'm thinking that before I take the club away about putting my left heel down, that will prevent me from doing that mistake that happens two moves before that. You understand what I'm saying? So this old-timer saw Mark and said, all right, I know what to tell this kid. Slow your hands down. Will it work for you? I don't know. Are you a hockey player who tends to slice the ball? Try slowing your hands down. I don't know. Might work. By the way, Andy Hart said we should call this just the tip. There. This segment should be called
Straight to the Point.
Just the Tip. It reminds me of what I wanted to call this show when we came on the air 8 years ago. I wanted to call the entire Sports Hub Golf Club Putts from the Rough, and they wouldn't let me do it. They wouldn't let me do it.
I wonder why. I don't know.
Seems
fine.
I don't know, but there's no one here. There's no boss standing over my shoulder right now. So for now, our community instruction segment will be called Just the Tip. Phil in Dedham, Just the Tip. Just the Tip, Phil. What do you got for us?
How you doing, Hardy?
Good.
I got two tips, actually, speaking of hockey. The first one was from legendary Boston Bruin Lyndon Byers once told me to wear a shirt while I'm frying bacon. As far as golf tips, on your short irons, take a towel. You wrap it under your right armpit, across your chest to your left armpit. And when you're swinging, you lean your hands forward and you don't drop the towel. It will force you to turn your body and give that nice uppercut swing to get the ball up in the air.
Yeah, there's that to me is another like fundamental. I don't think we're going to screw anybody up by saying, you know, like tuck the towel underneath your armpits. And there are a couple of different ways of accomplishing this, Phil. You can also take like a Nerf football and put it between your forearms, like get yourself into a comfortable setup position and then place that ball and then try and keep the ball in between your forearms while you're swinging. Obviously not on the course. You know, these are range techniques, obviously, but groove that feeling to the point where you know what it feels like and you know when your arms are separating. It accomplishes essentially the same thing, Phil, but that's a good one. Thank you. I still see that one a lot. I see the arm tucked under the towel tucked up underneath the armpits a lot. And more recently, I've seen the Nerf football between the forearms. And again, I put this into the category of connectivity, the turn, right? Connectivity and the turn. Scott Hawley told me years ago, you know, to just keep everything connected. It's like, man, your tempo, all this stuff, you know, you don't have enough going on in your swing to worry about it. He said, keep it all moving together. I'm like, what about the hips through first? What about getting that? He said, why don't you just keep everything together and see how that works? And when I do it, it does for a time. But then I start thinking that I'm sacrificing distance or something, and I start to change stuff because I'm an idiot. All right, Greg in New Hampshire, just the tip. What's your tip for us, Greg?
Well, I noticed I watch these videos every once in a while, and you know how they get annoying sometimes. But one of them, I changed my grip on, which is my trail hand, which is my right hand. I'm a righty. And what I do is I bring my elbow in like I'm at impact, and I twist my wrist, and I grab the club that way rather than, you know, extending your arm out, your wrist and your forearm, and it actually closed the head of the club up.
See, this is what I was afraid of. This is where we start doing real damage.
Twist the wrist, yeah.
Greg, do you realize you're going to kill this segment the first day it starts? Holy crap. You want what? You want people to just change the right hand. Left hand, fine. Change the right hand position on the club. Tuck the elbow. It's going to close the club face.
Well, it kind of made sense. You know, these videos, they like, get in your head. You're like, oh, my God. Okay, maybe I should do that.
Oh, my God. Oh, Greg, thank you. That's great. I appreciate it. Thanks, buddy. Do you realize there are like PGA instructors? If they're listening to this right now or hear about it afterward, they're probably going to have take some formal action against me and the radio station. This is setting back, you know, the work that they're trying to do by leaps and bounds. Like, it's borderline irresponsible what we're doing. But some of this stuff is good, though. The towel underneath the armpits, that's a good drill. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Change your grip.
Twist the wrist.
I played with a guy a couple of weeks ago. My wife went out and played nine a week ago last night. I think it was Friday night. I don't know. It was Sunday. Whenever it was. I don't know. Not important. We're playing with another couple. Great people. And David and Lauren. And David says to my wife, he's just like, wow. You know, he's talking to Blondie. He's like, you got a great swing. He goes, can I, you know, help you with one thing? And my wife is a very pleasant, polite person. She says, of course. He says, if you don't want to hear it, you know, don't, you know, be afraid to tell me no. She said, no, of course. He goes, your swing is great, but, you know, your grip. And he starts talking about the grip, and I interrupt him like 5 seconds in. I'm like, honey, also, great idea to change your grip mid-round. That's a wonderful idea. Why don't you start monkeying around with your grip after we've already played three holes? What? Like, what are you doing? It's not like she was, you know, she wasn't holding the golf club like a hatchet. He just wanted to start changing her grip three holes into a nine-hole match. Like, oh, don't, please, let's not. Let's just not do that. Tucker, I'll give you a chance to catch up on some of these phone calls here. People want to give us a tip, just a tip, a golf tip, and I got to give you my equipment review for a couple of wedges I put in the bag and some new shoes I've already taken for a test drive, once at the range and once walking nine holes. I'll tell you what they both were, and I will give you my honest, unvarnished assessment of both of these items coming up here this morning on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Constantly hitting it from the rough. This is the show for you. The Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's Hardy. Tucker just asked me something. What did you want to know, Tucker?
Yeah, with all this tip talk and just the tip and everything, what's your stance on receiving or on the receiving end of a tip mid-round? Because I kind of hate it when it's like a random dude that I'm paired up with and he's just like giving me twisting of the wrist tips or whatever, like we heard from Greg.
Okay, we've all been there.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to help you out with something mid-round.
Yeah.
I have to say, I don't mind it. I generally don't. Now, I rarely have someone I don't know tried to, you know, help me with something like mid-round. And I oftentimes, almost always, I'm playing with someone who's better than me. And sometimes I actually beg that person. I used to do it with my friend Rob Churchill all the time. I'm like, dude, help me out. You know, you give lessons for a living. Give me something here. What am I doing? And, you know, we're good buddies. So it's like sometimes I would listen to him and sometimes I wouldn't. It's kind of like how, you know, it's tough to coach your own kid because they won't listen to you. But I sometimes would actually just, you know, beg for some help in the middle of a round. And here's another thing that I have not only accepted but solicited before, too. If you're playing at a nice course, there's a couple of courses in Vegas. One in particular, when I played Wynn, the one time I played the Wynn golf course, the guy who was our four caddy was the former head pro at Reflection Bay. And a buddy that I was playing with, a friend of mine who lives in Vegas, knew this guy. His name is John. And he knew John. And we told him as we're going out, I'm like, awesome to see you, but please, you know, don't rake bunkers. Don't do anything. Just ride with us. You know, if you, you know, do whatever it is you have to do to, quote unquote, do your job. But, you know, he was not only a former head pro, but also a friend of one of these guys that I was playing with. And I said to him, I said, feel free to help me out with any instruction you have, because that's the type of guy I trust. That's somebody who is not going to say to me in the middle of the round, what I want you to do is take the club back much more upright, and then at the top, start to... No, he's a, this guy is a professional, and he's the type of guy who's going to say something to the effect of... the left heel thing is what I keep going back to. He's like, downswing, just step on your left heel. Start your downswing that way. You know, if he sees you, you're like casting out from the top or getting up on your toes too much or something. It's just like a tiny little thing, a tiny little feel thing without getting too technical. Like, put some weight on your left heel, right? Something like that, that could easily change, you know, or something. Or like our buddy said when he called in earlier, it's like, slow your hands down. That, I trust somebody like that to look at your swing and be able to tell you something that is not going to screw you up. It may not fix everything, but the only thing it's going to do is help. But, you know, like just a total rando that, you know, you're just somebody that you get paired up with and he wants to start. I don't say no. I don't tell the person to shut. I did tell my buddy David that it was a horrible idea to start trying to change my wife's grip in the middle of the round last time we played. But for myself, I don't mind it. I really don't. What can I say? I mean, affable. Yeah. I'm affable, Tucker.
If a guy's clearly like better than me, then sure, I'll be open to advice. But
or if he's a golf pro, you know, if he's like an actual instructor, listen to him by all means. All right, Kyle, this is going to work perfectly here, Kyle. What do you need? Do you have a tip, or do you need a tip?
I definitely need a tip. Right. I got a 56 degree wedge in my bag like a year ago.
Yeah,
and I finally got it kind of dialed in and trust it. And a guy randomly just handed me a 60 because he wasn't using it anymore. And I just have no confidence in using it ever. Like, what do you got when you guys get a new wedge like that? What can you do to, like, unless other than just hitting the club you trust and then dropping another ball and just giving it a whirl?
Well, number one, if you don't like it, and if you don't like a club, just take it out of the bag. You know, don't force yourself to hit something that you don't like. And this is where I got to with my wedges. Now, number one, the wedges I were using were probably a minimum, I would say, of 5-6 years old. And, you know, the grooves get worn down, especially if you're hitting your wedges as often as I am. You know, you miss greens, you end up hitting your wedges a lot. So you're supposed to, if you're playing a fair amount and you're hitting your wedges a lot, you're supposed to replace them every couple of years just for the grooves. That's number one. But number two, I wanted something different and updated, and like the technology and drivers or irons, the wedge technology has improved. So it was Monday. I go over to Golfers Warehouse there in Braintree. I go over and see our pal Vinny Mojica. I called him up ahead of time. I'm like, Vinny, I need wedges. He's like, all right, come on in. So we go in. I've never played golf with Vinny before, but he's seen me, you know, hit balls in the simulator, though. He knows what he's working with. And he's like, okay, what do you have now? You know, what do you like? What do you don't like? and you know, with what you have now, and you know, what do you shoot? You know, what's your game like around the greens? And I tell him, and I'm standing there looking at Mizunos. I'm looking at Vokies. I'm looking at, like, you know, player wedges. You know, oh, these things look nice. And Vinny, like, takes them out of my hand, and he grabs two off the shelf, and he grabs a Cleveland CBX2. And he said, what lofts do you like? I said, I like the configuration I have right now, which is a 54 and a 58, because I've got a 50-degree gap wedge that goes up. I've got a 46-degree pitch like we most do, a 50-degree gap wedge that came with my set of Callaways, the XRs. And he says, hit these. You just take them over there and hit these, and we'll take a look. So the Cleveland CBX2, according to Cleveland, they said this is their assessment of it. Built for the majority of golfers who play game improvement equipment, which I do. I'm not playing blades, right? The Cleveland CBX2 wedge provides tour-level spin and control for players looking to upgrade their short game. Get spin, control, and all the forgiveness you need with the new Cleveland CBX2. Sounds good so far, right? Vinny also told me, he said, a lot of good players tend to have the sweet spot of their wedges back closer to the hosel. And you'll see on a lot of good players that impact mark, as they're hitting the ball in the same place every time, tends to be closer to the hosel than it is to the, you know, the dead set middle of the club face. He said, but this Cleveland wedge, they spread it out a little bit more, so that sweet spot is closer to the middle. Because if you tell me I should be hitting it closer to the hosel, next thing that happens, I'm, you know, hitting hosel rockets. I'm going to start shanking the ball. It's only a matter of time. So, I mean, I hit him. I loved him. He said, look, the sole of this thing allows you to kind of get underneath, but it stops you from laying the sod over it and blah, 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 blah. Okay. Without reading or knowing anything else about them, I hit them there at Golfer's Warehouse. I loved how they felt. I took them to the range. Love them. Come to find out, as I do some investigating afterward, Golf Digest, hot list for 2020, calls it an everyman wedge. Cavity back and hidden hollowed out areas in the hosel and heel move the sweet spot toward the toe. I'm like, oh, Vinny wasn't lying to me. The soles vary in width throughout the set to match average player needs. And they call it a regular Joe wedge with a Tour Pro face, milled laser edge surface, blah, blah, blah. I only hit him at the range once, and I played 9 holes with him. I did notice that the ball was checking up a little bit better. I am not spinning the ball back with these wedges. I wasn't before. I'm not now. But they're stopping closer to where they land than my last wedges that I was hitting. Okay? Again, if you're just looking and you're shopping, the only consideration should be is how are you hitting them? I love the look of the, you know, the matte black wedges from various manufacturers. I love the look of the Mizuno wedge. I have wedges I keep a separate golf bag that is almost entirely, you know, there's probably 15 clubs in there, and I would say more than half of them are wedges that I've fallen out of favor with or just don't work. Okay? The only consideration should be is what someone who knows what they're talking about tells you what they think will work for your game. Hit them in the store like Golfer's Warehouse or any place that will allow you to hit these things. And then how do they work for you on the course? And so far, these Cleveland CBX2s are fantastic, as advertised. Very difficult to hit them fat. They've got a certain the leading edge on them, the bounce, whatever terminology you prefer, allows you to slide underneath. This is what I should be hitting. I want to hit a wedge that looks like a player's wedge. I'm not a player. I'm a guy who needs, by the Golf Digest assessment, an everyman wedge, regular Joe wedge, right? That's it. You hit a drive, you know, every once in a while. You just crush it right down the middle, and now you've left yourself 90 yards into a par four. The last thing you want to do is lay the sod over it with a wedge that maybe you shouldn't be hitting in the first place because it doesn't suit your game. These tend to suit my game. There you go. There's the very long answer to your question and my first of two product reviews. I'll give the other one here in a few minutes, but I want to grab another couple calls. We're talking tips here this morning. Just the tip. Nick in Walpole has a tip for us. What is it, Nick? What's your tip for everybody here today? Very, very irresponsible what we're doing here this morning. Wouldn't you agree, Nick?
That's all right. Someone's got to do it. We can't all pay to get a new lesson.
Yeah, exactly. So
recently I've been having a pretty bad slice. And for those who have been hitting one, listen up, because I think I've found a pretty good solution. So a slice happens when, you know, your club head is pointed to the right, but the actual path is going to the left, so that generates spin.
Okay.
So then, you know, you hit a slice. So the fix to that is turn your wrists over a little bit more. So for a righty, it's counterclockwise. So you're going to be a little bit more square with the ball.
Yeah.
And you might still be hitting a little bit of a slice, but at least it's not going to be so terrible like it maybe once was. Now, don't snap your wrist, because then you're going to have the opposite problem.
Right.
And you're going to start hitting a hook. So that's my solution.
All right, thanks, Nick. Turn your wrists over. Look, I'm laughing because I don't know. I know it's what Johnny Carson used to do, you know, when he would mimic his golf swing at the end of his monologue. Anyway, you know, have that huge wrist turn, you know, right after impact. I'm sure there are good players everywhere listening right now, maybe even some instructors slapping their foreheads saying, Hardy, what are you doing? Don't do this. I think we're better off with the tips like the towel underneath your armpits, that type of thing. Rob in Fort Myers. Oh, what's up, Rob?
What's up, Hardy?
Yeah,
how are you, buddy?
Good.
I just bashed my head off the steering wheel four times after listening to Nick, so it's okay.
I'm hoping
the concussion kicks in quickly.
Okay, this is Churchill. Now, this is Rob Churchill.
It is.
Okay, well, I was talking about you earlier on the show today, Rob.
I was listening while I was driving home, and I heard my name, and, you know, I felt the need to call. And since you were doing the tips, you know.
Is your tip to tell us to stop doing this?
Please stop. can we make a rule, though? If you're over a 10 handicap, can you not be a part of this?
I'm over a 10. I'm not giving any tips.
I heard Nick's and I cried. Internally, I cried.
I'm soliciting the tip. This is a tip community, okay? It takes a village to get better at this game, Rob. Just the tip. We don't need a whole lot of other conversation.
No, it's just like in a bunker shot. Like, here's my tip. If you're in a bunker, don't look at the ball. Look at the spot you want to make impact with.
Oh.
In order to get the ball out of the trap.
Oh. Okay, see? Now, you see? It's kind of catchy, though, isn't it? You hear a tip, and then you want to share your own tip, don't you? Uh-huh.
But I'm a golf professional, so I have to give some sort of valuable information to your very somewhat educated audience.
Oh, stop it. Okay, but that's
They're very good people. They're very good people. I hope everyone in Massachusetts is safe up there, because we're not down here.
Now, good luck down there, buddy. I'll talk to you soon, all right? I'll give you a call.
I appreciate it. We'll see you.
Oh, Rob says don't look at the ball. Look at the spot in the sand you want to hit it in a bunker shot. All right. I do have one tip, and it's one that Stephen Daly from the Cape Club of Sharon gave me last year, and it is not a swing tip. It is not a mechanical tip. It is a course management tip. How's that? Okay. I'll share that with you. I still got to tell you about the shoes that I tried, too. All right? We'll do both of those things right on the other side here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
If you want to play below par, keep listening. This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, welcome back to Sports Hub Golf Club. Going to run a little late this morning, Tucker. Is that all right?
It's fine with me.
You have a problem with that?
No, zero.
All right. First things first, the tip that I got from Stephen Daly as we wrap up our segment of just the tips from the Cape Club and Sharon last year, he told us on this show, and something that I took to heart, and it will make probably the biggest difference in your game in terms of score, okay? that I can think of. And it requires a little bit of work on your part. But this makes too much sense not to work. He said, you want to, if you are, you know, a double digit handicapper, you know, 10 or higher, and you want to get better, you want to shoot lower scores. He said, improve your play on the par threes. If you were like me, making a par on a par three is a rarity. And you're making lots of fours, fives, sometimes a six. You ever triple a par three? He said, if you make four, fives, and sixes on the par threes, try and turn that into three, fours, and fives. If you're making three, fours, and fives, work on your game to the point where you're making two, threes, and fours. Right now, this sounds simple, but for me, it actually spoke to me because I had this hitch. I had this mental block. I had something going on for a couple of years where I was having difficulty hitting irons off the tee. You put me 162 yards out and, you know, pin right there dead in front of you, and I'm supposed to hit a 7-iron into that pin. If I'm teeing that ball up, it just changed my swing. It changed my approach to it. So I started working on the range, something I hardly ever do. I was teeing up irons so I could simulate what was going wrong with my tee shots and par threes. If you tend to miss the green anyway, but your bunker play is horrible, work on your bunker play. If you have a tendency to short side yourself or something, work on those flop shots. Whatever it takes to improve your scores on par threes. There is something real magical about occasionally getting to write down a two on a scorecard if you birdie a par three. Or if you're used to making fours and fives, if you can turn those into threes and fours, you just saved yourself four strokes around. Your 92 just became an 88. Do whatever you can to improve your scoring on par threes. That's what Steven said. He goes, and if you really, really work on it, you know, you will change those fives and sixes to threes and fours, and now you're saving two strokes around, or two strokes a hole on four par threes. Think about that. That's eight strokes around you could potentially be saving just by improving your play on the par threes. All I'm saying is it made too much sense for me not to try it, and it's worked at least to the point where I started focusing in on what was giving me issues on a lot of par threes. Okay, so there we go. All right, you know what? Let's do this, Tucker. I don't want to go too late here. We're going to do the headlines real quick. I want to give you the equipment review. So we're going to continue the Sports Hub Golf Club for at least another half a segment anyway. I want to tell you about the shoes that I took for a test drive.
So when does Hey It's Hardy begin? Because we got to hear that theme song. You know,
we'll hear the theme song.
Okay.
You want me to get you? I don't want to rush the equipment review though. That's the problem.
No, take your time.
Let's do the headlines. Hey, It's Hardy will begin, and the Hey, It's Hardy show will begin with a golf equipment review. Can you wrap your head around that? Is everybody going to be okay? I'm okay with it. Are you okay with it, Tucker?
That works with me.
Let's do that.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores.org/Noah.